Will Clark has joined us on Sports Byline. Will, I want to ask you, take you back to that 1984 U.S. Olympic team, because you were one of the great stars on that team. And during the five-game Olympic tournament, you batted .429 with three home runs and eight RBIs. What was the big difference in playing an international competition and in the Olympics as compared to, say, playing a college game or even a minor league game?
You know what? It was real interesting. I mean, real interesting because, you know, you're playing against guys that are playing for their country too, and you know we got along well with some of the other teams that we played against, but at the same time, you know, we were out there trying to beat up on people. So it was interesting. I mean, it was a lot of fun, but at the same time, you know, it's like, hey, look, we're going out there to do our thing here, boys. So,
did you enjoy the experience, or what's the lasting memory you have of that Olympic experience?
I love the Olympic experience. There's absolutely nothing like going out there and playing while you got USA written across your chest. I mean, it is absolutely one of the most fun things I've ever done on a baseball field. And if they ever asked me to do it again, I'd jump right back in the middle of it. I mean, it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of intensity. We did a lot of travel and we were all over the country, but at the same time, we had fun.
You know, I got to know you when you were with the Giants here, and you had the nickname of Will the Thrill, and yet I never knew where that came from. And I've heard two stories, one by your classmates at Jesuit High School in New Orleans, and the other is by Bob Brenly. Which one is true?
It's the Bob Brenly story is the one that's true. Bob Brenly and Mike Kruko in spring training of 1986, they concocted it, and it sort of stuck. You know, I mean, it rhymed really well, and it stuck, and I've been with it ever since.
That first major league at bat, which was April 8, 1986, some people may not know, but you hit a home run, and you hit it off of Hall of Famer Nolan Ryan. Now, you're a young rookie player. You're stepping into the box the first time, and you're facing a future Hall of Famer. Tell me how you approach that at bat mentally.
Mentally, you know, I know before the game I had asked several of my teammates how he pitched them, especially Chili Davis, because Chili was a left-handed hitter. And, you know, I got some insight in talking to, you know, the other players. I got some insight as to what I should look for, what part of plate I should look for it, and stuff like that. And he actually did me a big favor. First pitch I walked up there, first pitch he threw was a curveball. And, you know, it was a strike, and I just sort of backed out the batter's box, and I was like, okay. I said, you know, that's just another curveball that somebody else would throw, too. And so, I mean, I think that sort of settled me in. And two pitches later, he left a fastball out over the plate. And when I caught it, I had no clue it went out. And I was running around first base. I saw it go over the center field fence, and I don't even remember running around touching home plate. That's how elated I was.
You know, the one thing that a lot of people don't know is that Nolan Ryan had a wicked curveball. They think about his fastball, but I remember doing one of his games, and I was just – he threw a two-hitter in the game that I was doing, and it was an incredible pitch. Did he mix his pitches? Was that his only two pitches that he had, the curveball and the fastball?
Well, when I first started facing him, that's what he had. He had fastball, curveball. And then later on, when I started facing him down the road a little bit, he mixed in a changeup. So he went from a two-pitch pitcher to a three-pitch pitcher. And it actually, as he got older, it made him better.
Tell me about the moment that you think that you became a major league hitter. Because, as you know, when you're young, you're starting to know the teams, starting to know the pitchers, starting to know the ballparks. But when do you think you settled in and really became comfortable as a major league hitter?
You know, my first year, we had gotten 2 years through the season, and then I broke my elbow. Andres Galarraga and I got in a collision at first base. And so I finished up the year after I came back, and I was not the same. I had elbow surgery during the off season to get back. And so, you know, I came into 1987 with a huge, huge, huge question mark. Not only from, you know, everybody in baseball, but from myself. You know, how would I respond to this surgery? And 1987, I went out there. I played darn near every day. I hit it anywhere from leadoff to number seven in the lineup. I was all over the place. And I wound up hitting over 300 with 35 homers. So I think 1987 was sort of cinched it for me. I was like, all right, you know, I belong here.
A lot of people say your finest season, though, was 1989 when you batted .333. You lose out on the batting title to Tony Gwynn on that final day of the season. You had 111 RBIs. That final day, take me through it a little bit.
Well, I knew that, Tony and I were going into the last day of the season vying for the batting title, and we were literally thousands of a percentage point away from one another. So, I mean, we were, for all intents and purposes, we were tied. And, Kevin, we had already clinched the division. We were going to go to the playoffs. Kevin Mitchell, my MVP partner, who hit in our four hole that year, he took the last day of the year off. And so I thought it didn't have any protection. So I was just sort of battling, trying to get a pitch to hit. And if they walked me, that was fine. And it just so happened that I hit three balls right on the screws, and I had one hit to show for it. And in the meantime, Tony found a way to get three hits, and he beat me that day.
You also finished second in the All-Star voting that year to your teammate Kevin Mitchell, but it was a very special year for the Giants because they made it all the way to the World Series, but to get there, they had to beat the Chicago Cubs in the National League Championship Series. And in game number one, I remember this, you had a solo home run. And then prior to the subsequent at-bat, you saw catcher Joe Girardi go out to the mound to discuss with Greg Maddux how to pitch to you. And from the on-deck circle, the story goes, you watched that conversation. And did you actually read Greg Maddux's lips saying, fastball high inside?
No, I didn't say high inside. What happened was we had bases loaded, two outs, and it was the fifth or sixth inning. I forget which one it was. And I had already hit a double to left center off of a fastball away. And then, as you alluded to, I hit a homer my previous at-bat off of a changeup, a 3-2 changeup. So the only really pitch that they had not thrown me was a fastball in, and they had been pounding some of our other left-handed hitters in the lineup. They were throwing them a lot of fastballs in. And Don Zimmer comes out to the mound. He's going to have a little talk with Greg Maddux. And, Don's quite a bit shorter than Maddux. And I remember looking at Maddux, and, I mean, it was like he was standing next to me. I read his lips, and it said, fastball in. And I said, I looked at Kevin Mitchell. We were standing together in the on-deck circle. I said, I was going to look fastball in. I said, now I'm definitely going to look fastball in. And get back up to the batter's box, stick my little hole, get in the batter's box. And the first pitch was a fastball in, and I did not miss it. And it wound up over there on Clark Avenue out of right field. And that grand slam sort of sealed the game one victory for the Giants.
Yeah, and then in game five, the at-bat that I don't think anybody that is a baseball fan will ever forget, with the score tied 1-1 in the bottom of the eighth. And it was an epic bat at-bat. Several two-strike foul balls. You kept peeling them off. And then you singled to center field to drive in the two runs, breaking the tie and sending the Giants onto the World Series. Tell me about that at bat against Mitch.
Well, the one thing about Mitch Williams that nobody really understood about him, everybody called him the wild thing, but he had really good control. And, he's throwing 96, 97 miles an hour. And the first pitch, he just absolutely just painted a fastball away. There was nothing I could do with it. The next pitch was a fastball away. Again, I fouled it off, and then so now I'm in the hole 0-2. And I remember backing up out of the batter's box and just taking a deep breath, and I said, I am not giving in. I'm going to put my nose right in the middle of this home plate, and we're going to battle. And he missed on a pitch or two, and then I fouled off some tough pitches. I do remember before I got the base hit, I fouled off a high fastball, and I said, ooh, man, I said, I was actually on that pitch. I said, if he comes back with that one, I said, I might have a chance. And sure enough, the next pitch was another fastball up and out over the plate. I hit the ball back up the middle. And believe it or not, I was hoping it didn't hit second base. It was headed right at second base. I didn't want it to ricochet at one of the fielders. And made it out there in the center field. We scored two runs. And, then we came in and got the last three outs of the ninth inning and then sent us into the World Series.
Will, when I look at your career and I think about the moments, I mentioned about the first pitch. Of course, you also hit a home run at Candlestick Park for the first time at bat as a player with the Giants there at home. And then I think about that World Series that you went to. It was everybody will remember because it was the Earthquake World Series. And when you think back on that, how crazy was that? I mean, you'd seen a lot of different things in sports, but how crazy was that?
Yeah, that's the one thing that I you know, had never anticipated was, you know, Mother Nature to sort of rear her head. You know, we had lost the first two games over there in Oakland. We were coming back for game three. We had 62,000 people in Candlestick. And, I mean, it was supposed to be a big momentum switch for us. And then, you know, when the earthquake happened, needless to say, it took the life completely out of the World Series. And, you know, we wound up losing to the A's, but the A's really swept us. They had a very, very good ball club. But, you know, for all intents and purposes, when the earthquake happened, it was over.
Yeah, was it hard for the team to get the edge back when you had such a shutdown for an extended period of time?
Yeah, that's exactly right, Ron. I mean, you know, you don't ever have more than one day off over the course of the season. And, you know, for us to have 10 days off and then try to come back and get that momentum back and get that feeling back and all that, it just didn't happen.
You know, I always remember the look on your face many times. It was a very serious look. It was almost a grimace to some degree, and I often wondered whether that was because you were just so locked in or that it was that you just grinded when you played this game, that you were that making that kind of effort for perfection. Help me out a little bit. Which was it, Will?
Well, the one thing about that is, you know, I'm out there for 3 or 4 hours, however long this game takes, and, you know, all I'm going to do is I'm going to give my teammates and my coaching staff and my fans all I got. And, you know, if that means concentrating, if that means not playing around while I'm on the field, whatever it is, then that's what I'm going to do in order to beat the guys in the other dugout. And, you know, a lot of people, you know, told me, they said, look, we probably would have loved to have you on our team, but we hated to play against you. And look, that's just the way it is. I mean, I was a guy who wanted to, when I walked out on the field, I wanted to beat you. I wanted to beat you every time. And so, you know, that if you don't think that way, if you think, oh, well, you know, this day I just might not have it. If you sort of cash it in, those are the kind of guys I don't want to be around.
You have a lot of pride, and I'm just wondering that after the 8 years with the San Francisco Giants, you know, they did not renew your contract, or you couldn't come to a long-term contract agreement because they were concerned about injury problems and everything. But yet you go to the Texas Rangers for 5 years, and you had a great time there. You finished the first season, I believe, at 329, and you had a high level of productivity the entire time you were there. Did that make you feel good about having, you know, being able to do that after somebody apparently did not want you?
You know, and then that's the thing. You know, when people doubt you and they say, well, we're not going to sign you back, you know, because a little banged up here and a little banged up there. Well, the reason I was banged up is because I'm playing hard, but that doesn't mean I can't do my job. And, you know, to go out there and have five really quality years there in Texas, you know, and put up some major numbers, you know, it's almost like a slapping in the face to the people that let me go. Is that, you underestimated me, and you should never have done that.
We only have a minute left, but when you did walk off the field for the very last time, you're the type of guy that loved the game so much that I would think they almost had to rip the uniform off of you, or it was tough for you to take it off for the last time.
You know what? It was definitely tough, but I'm also one of those kind of guys, when I make a decision, I stick with it. And, you know, my wife and I had a son, and he was a little autistic, and I needed to be home and be daddy. And, you know, I had my day in the sun. It was time for me to get on with the second part of my life. I'm doing that right now. I'm thoroughly enjoying it. I'm back with the Giants as a special assistant. So, you know, I still keep my hands in baseball to a certain degree. But, you know, I'm also enjoying being a family man and being daddy.
What do you think your baseball legacy is, Will?
In talking to, you know, some of my former teammates and some of the guys I played against on other teams, I would hope my legacy is that I was a true professional. I went out on the field. I conducted business professionally. I tried not to show anybody up, but yet at the same time, I was out there to kick your butt. And when the bright lights were on and somebody needed the clutch run to be driven in, I was your man. That was my legacy. I wanted to have the bat in my hands when the game was on the line. And there's not too many guys that want to do that. A lot of guys tend to shy away from that light. And I went towards it.
Well, you're absolutely right, because only the truly great players feel that way. The others are fearful of failure. Will, thank you very much for joining us, and I hope we have a chance to connect again. Take care, Will.
Same here, Ron. Thank you so much.
Will Clark with us, former first baseman who played 15 years in the major leagues. We continue with more of you in Sports Byline.